Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, and I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here today with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Friday, August 10th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
TGIF, Melody.
Oh,
It is exciting.
Yes, it is. See how desperately I need a TG. Anyway, let's get started. Gold had a good week, or a try, and it didn't go any lower than what we had anticipated, but I think we're going to see gold much higher next week, and we're going to talk about some of those reasons, just why I expect to see gold a little bit higher. So we did have a little pressure on gold today, down a dollar at 12.12. We have silver down 13 cents at $15.39. Platinum was down $4 at $833. Palladium up $2 at $944. The USDX today is trading much stronger, 0.73 at 96.34. And crude oil was up 85 cents today at 67.66. And there's reasons why the dollar is that strong, and there's reasons why gold, really, with the dollar strength up that level, and we only see a little bit of pressure on gold. So as I really do believe gold is going to take off next week. The stock markets today, let me bring my numbers up here. The stock market today, the Dow was down at 195 points at 25,313. The NASDAQ was down 52 at 7,839. The S&P was down 20 at 2,833. 10-year yield, 2.86%, down 0.08. The euro was weaker by 1.04 at 114. Japan got hit, was down 1.33%. Germany was down 2% overnight. And a little more fear beginning to creep into these markets. And Bitcoin was down another 3% at $63.98. And I think the headline, Dave, is really about Turkey.
I think you're right.
And this is why I believe that we're going to see much higher prices in gold. We haven't seen anything yet from what are going to be talking about, the type of contagion and so forth that we can experience from this. And you know what's really interesting, Dave, is this all comes from, there's been issues with Turkey. I mean, there's, you know, with Syria and, you know, so maybe this was just coming to a head, and because of the preacher in Turkey was the reason why, you know, the sanctions were placed on by this administration. But we'll talk, let's get started on, and we'll be talking about this. And so this morning, the president of Turkey, Erdogan, called on its citizens to convert their hard currency and gold, and they mean their hard currency, which included the U.S. dollar and gold, into lira, after the local currency tumbled to a record low this week, changing the euros, the dollars, and gold that you are keeping beneath your pillows into lira at our banks. He says this is a domestic and a national struggle. Erdogan said that Turkey was facing an economic war. He noted that the country would respond to those countries who had started it. We are facing economic attacks today. We need to defend our country. He says the economic attack against us now is the same as the coup attempt against us. And he's urging the country to increase outputs and to increase exports.
Yeah, those are fighting words, Melody. Another military strategic ally of ours, and obviously a longtime member of NATO. Erdogan also said in a speech that Turkey was diverting to the Chinese market to overcome what he said were subjective evaluations from rating agencies. Erdogan has repeatedly criticized the credit rater, saying their downgrades of Turkey's sovereign debt to junk were politically motivated. Now, the Turkish lira added to its steep losses today, hitting a fresh record low. The lira traded down 15% against the U.S. dollar. The currency also traded down 20% earlier today, reaching a record low. The White House later said in a statement, quote, as he stated, the president has authorized the preparation of documents to raise tariffs on imports of steel and aluminum from Turkey. They used again the Section 232 tariffs that are imposed on imports from countries who, in the eyes of the White House, whose exports threaten our national security. Melody.
Well, you know, and those are, they are some hefty tariffs. It was, what, 25% on aluminum and 50% on steel? And yeah, so we saw the, of course, the Turkish stocks fell today. They dropped almost 15%, and the one ETF with big exposure to Turkey was already down 42% this year prior to Friday's losses or today's losses. And so you have the sharp drop in Turkish assets. Came after a delegation returned from Washington with no apparent progress on the detention of U.S. pastor Andrew Brunson. Erdogan has charged Brunson with supporting a group blamed for the attempted coup in 2016. And President Trump did threaten to slap large sanctions on the country if they didn't free him. And August 1st, sanctions on Turkey's justice and interior ministers, those sanctions prohibited U.S. citizens from doing business with them.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, U.S. stocks fell today as well. You know, bank shares led the way lower in the U.S., not surprisingly, in response to an international threat involving finances. Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley all dropped by more than 1%. Tech shares also declined. Quincy Crosby, who's of Prudential Financial, said this is a classic instinctive reaction to the market or in the market. He says stocks are down while gold and treasuries are getting a bid today. The currency issue in emerging markets in Turkey is nothing new. This is just exacerbated, is what she said. Now, I'm having a hard time pulling up. Oh, here we go. Soon after this announcement was made, it looks from roughly around 10 o'clock to a little after 11, gold was trading at its highest of the day around 1225, and then it began to level off and decline, after the initial fury and reaction took hold. So, Quincy Crosby also said that global central banks could take action to prevent the situation from getting worse. She says, and we know, historically you've seen central banks act to ease these types of situations. The goal for them, as our Fed certainly, is to minimize collateral damage.
Well, yeah, we're certainly going to see a flight to quality, and that's no surprise. And this also comes with all the news on tariffs, you know, with China and, you know, everywhere else. So, again, you know, these words on tariffs. But, you know, Turkey was warned that that if they didn't release the pastor, there would be much stronger tariffs placed on them. What's interesting is we don't know what the fallout's going to be. Now, I did see a report that CNBC actually couldn't get confirmation from the Commerce Department about those bigger, higher tariffs other than these first sanctions that were imposed on some of the citizens of Turkey. But these latter ones, there's still no confirmation from the Commerce Department the last time that I had checked. So, and I think what the biggest worry is that we really don't know, this first domino, how is it going to affect all the other European central banks? Is there going to be a follow-through? Is there going to be to where these banks have lent significant amounts of money in Turkey? So what is the contagion? We don't know at this point in time. So this is where I think you got some information, Dave, from the Bank of for International Settlements.
Yeah, we don't know, as you suggested, but you know, data from the BIS, often called the Central Bank of Central Banks, it shows that Spanish banks are owed over $83 billion by Turkish borrowers. They owe the French $38 plus billion, and banks in Italy are owed roughly $17 billion. Now, regulators in Europe are reportedly worried that the weaker currency is going to lead to defaults in foreign loans, probably a well-placed concern. There's one European economist who said that some Eurozone banks are under pressure due to their direct equity exposure to Turkish banks or their participation in syndicated loans. That's a loan offered by a group of lenders. So, you know, it's going to be it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I mean, you know, although, you know, the exposure is international, the BIS figures also show that the U.S. is owed about $18 billion, Japan $14 billion, U.K. $19 billion. So, again.
And, you know, what's interesting, I think it was just earlier today, at least it was reported, that Erdogan and Russian President Putin told each other in a telephone call that they were pleased with the positive direction of their economic and trade ties. Erdogan and Putin also reportedly voiced was characterized as contentment regarding Turkey and Russia's ongoing cooperation in the both the energy and defense industry sector. So, and the two leaders also discussed the latest developments in Syria. So, again, it's interesting to see these partnerships develop with these countries. Turkey is willing to, you know, give up the NATO representation and so forth. And, it could be that little black swan. You know, here you have a pastor, and by all rights, Turkey should release him. You know, and you know, to say, you know, release a pastor, you know, this is what we're going to do unless you don't. But it could be that black swan that no one is anticipating, that now all of a sudden you have this big situation coming from the contagion and the loans that were made by various banks tied to all the debt in Turkey, and there it begins to unwind. So, you know, it's...
This seems like a classic KGB strategy at work, Melody. You know, undermine yet another NATO ally, create the scenarios under which, you know, an adjoining country, in this case, Turkey, you know, is that, you know, that trouble can be created for, and you know, opening up an opportunity for Russia. You know, yeah, to say, hey, we'll lend a hand. Let us know what we can do. We'll get you out of this jam.
Yep.
Paybacks or you know what, Melody.
No, I don't know.
There's always a time to pay the piper. Putin the piper.
Now let's talk a little bit about some U.S. news. And again, this was also positive for gold. And, you know, I'm not sure what really propelled gold to the higher price this morning, but it couldn't hold it. But it just shows that gold is ready to take off. And we have U.S. consumer prices that did rise in July, and the underlying trend is continuing to strengthen. The Labor Department said this morning that the CPI increased 0.2% in July. And, of course, the bulk of that was due to a rise in the cost of shelter. The CPI rose 0.1% in June. But in the 12 months through July, the CPI increased 2.9%, actually matching the increase in June. But, you know, you don't want to use what we really need, food and energy. So let's just pull those out.
Jeez.
You know, let's pull that, you know, volatile food and energy component. And the CPI rose 0.2%. And of course, the same gains ends in May and June. And let's see, the core CPI was 2.4%, the largest rise since September of 2008. So another number correlating to the beginnings of the Great Recession, which I do believe is interesting. I think it's important. I think these parallels mean something. And it goes to show we're heading into the same boiling pot of financial distress as we experienced then, and only this time it's going to be much worse.
Call it another inconvenient truth.
Yes.
Melody, you know, I mean, economists that were, you know, who were polled by Reuters and forecast both CPI and core CPI, you know, rising 0.2% in July, and the U.S. Treasury yields held at three-week lows after this data was released, while the dollar rose slightly against its basket of currencies. You know, the Fed, as we've mentioned and wrote about last week, more closely tracks a different inflation measure, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, the PCEI. And again, it has, you know, one that includes and one that excludes food and energy, the so-called core PCI, PCEI. That rose 1.9% in June. The gauge hit the Fed's 2% target in March for the first time in more than 6 years. And, you know, that led Fed policymakers to say that they will not be unduly concerned if it overshoots its target in the coming months. Yeah, that's probably, well, you know, as we talked about last week, the real inflation rate, the actual inflation rate, if you will, certainly taking into account changes that were made, you know, as far back as 20 plus years ago, when federal regulators redefined CPI and PCE, the actual inflation rate is easily over 5%. And, you know, so to continue to muddle around, unfortunately, we're stuck to a large extent with what our government hands us, Melody, correct? And so we report these numbers at least once every month, sometimes more often, and we do it not even with tongue-in-cheek. We do it with a big concern, but knowing that we will continue to remind, not even sure we need to remind listeners that, you know, the actual numbers are much, so much larger that, you know, these reported numbers are simply a mirage.
And that's our job, to show just what the truth is. And while the rest of the economy might have pointed higher in July, I guess the American worker is still taking a little bit of a step backward. You have hourly and weekly earnings. They've languished, and we'll talk about the hourly and weekly earnings when we get back from our break. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
We will find you acting on your best.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom, and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Give us a call for all your gold and silver coin needs. Get it while you can, ladies and gentlemen. And we're certainly beginning to see the little cracks. August, we're almost halfway through the month, one of the quietest months of the year. A little bit of summer doldrums for the gold and silver market. But September has been posted as the most volatile trading month of the year. And it seems like things are building up to make that come true. So I can only see stronger gold prices here in the very near future. And if you're a worker, it looks like the pay growth has gone down maybe a little bit. Pay growth is missing, and gross domestic product, we know, rose 4.1% in the second quarter, and of course that was the best gain in nearly 4 years. Job growth has been solid, with July's gain of 157,000 in non-farm payrolls. Payrolls have risen an average of 215,000 a month in 2018. The best pay since 2015, and 30,000 per month ahead of the same period in 2017. And consumer confidence also remains good despite the weak wage growth. The University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index is up 4.8% year over year, Dave.
Yeah, those sort of good news numbers, Melody, are offset by this core inflation we mentioned in the last segment that has risen at its fastest pace in 10 years. The decline that results from, that essentially the change in wages less the change in prices, the real wages, they're at their worst level in, 6 years. That's the real side. That's the ugly side of inflation, the side that undermines our real purchasing power day in and day out. These figures, are different from Labor Department release earlier in the month that showed the employment cost index rising 2.8% year over year. And that indicator happens to be followed closely by the Fed and doesn't incorporate an inflation adjustment. Not adjusted for inflation, average hourly earnings rose 2.7% last month. It's slightly lower than the second quarter pace, while average weekly earnings increased 3%. That's before inflation, remember. After, things are looking a lot less well.
Well, there's another factory that's going to be closing, although they didn't make any headlines on who's going to do their manufacturing, but it looks like they're going to close some. Crocs, Dave.
I know. I guess, and what would have to fall under the headline, what will doctors and nurses, do across the world? Crocs. Crocs announced that it was closing the last of its manufacturing shops on Tuesday. But the comfy footwear company asserted it was not going out of business. you know, rather was, you know, while it was moving ahead to, you know, with plans to close its last manufacturing facility, which happens to be located in Italy, by the way, you know, it would still continue, although it was, you know, it was looking for new companies, new sites to continue with its shoe line.
Yeah, but they haven't announced who that third-party manufacturer is going to be, so we're all waiting
with bated breath.
With bated breath, yes, to see where it's going to be located. Hopefully it's here in the States, but we'll just have to wait and see. Well, you know, we're heading into the – well, we're into the second break, and now is the time for your favorite spot of the week, Dave.
Favorite.
Brevity is golden.
Yeah, we've got a little twist today, Melody. I mean, our segment's serious for a change. I mean, you know, there's always some kind of, we hope, underlying connection to a serious issue that is gold and silver. But today, you know, it just, I guess it just got in my crawl. You know, the federal government recorded a $77 billion deficit last month, you know, with increased government spending and, you know, tax cuts, keeping the country on track to record its biggest annual deficit in 6 years. You know, the Treasury Department reported that in the first 10 months of this budget year, which ends September 30th, the deficit has totaled $684 billion. That's up 21% from the same period last year. Now, revenues are only up 1% this year, the increase held back by a big drop in particularly corporate tax payments. Spending is up over 4% this year, reflecting a big boost Congress approved earlier this year for both domestic and military programs, and especially rising costs to finance the debt. Now, the administration last month sharply revised upward its deficit estimates, projecting annual deficits that will once again top $1 trillion next year. It'll come very close by the end of this year, as we're seeing. And Melody, I'm afraid that is this week's boring but notable Brevity is Golden.
Well, I don't think it was boring whatsoever. I think it's very important that we see and understand this deficit growing to the degree that it is growing, and there is only one outcome. I mean, we are in waters that we've never treaded before. And, you know, the amount of debt, I was reading, I don't know if I have these numbers that's handy today, but, I mean, when you look at government debt, when you look at personal debt, when you look at corporate debt, I mean, we've never been in this category before. The U.S. households are $13.15 trillion in debt. It's the highest level in American history. Wages aren't rising to compensate for those trillions of dollars in debt, the highest in history. And it just keeps growing. And, you know, basically, you know, America is bankrupt. And there's no other way to look at it. And, I mean, the numbers are staggering. So it's not anything, I think, is boring. I think it's almost to the, it's kind of frightening if you're not prepared for it and understand it. So, but there is one area that you can go into, and that's silver. We talk gold and silver on the program, and there's a number of reasons. We're going to talk a little bit about silver. There's multiple reasons why you should be bullish on silver, other than the main fundamentals, and this is some of their fundamentals that we can look at as far as the importance of silver and why the prices are going to be higher and why you should be bullish on it. And number one, it's really easy. It's very undervalued. We all, you know that, but how many people overlook that? Buy low, sell high. We can look at this, the gold to silver ratio. It tells us how many ounces of silver it takes to buy 1 ounce of gold. And over the last two decades, whenever the gold to silver ratio has reached around 80, it has then dropped lower to around 45. So when this ratio is around 80, silver is deemed undervalued. So right now, that gold-to-silver ratio currently stands just slightly below 80. It's telling us silver is undervalued. So if we assume that this ratio drops to 45 again and gold prices remain the same, silver prices would have to go up a lot.
Yeah, heck of a lot, Melody. And number two, India has a growing appetite for silver. This largely and fastly growing populated country, India. Usually when, you know, we're talking about that country, investors see the country as a major gold consumer. But, you know, India's appetite for silver is also increasing. You know, in June 2018, $364 million worth of silver was imported into India. For the previous year, that amount was just $178 million. India imported 5% more silver in June this year than last year. And third, you know, consumer demand for silver overall is improving. Looking at the mint sales of silver, it looks like there's a silver rush in the making. I mean, between June and July this year, silver sales at the U.S. Mint, you know, skyrocketed by over 103%. It sold 885,000 ounces of silver in American Eagle coins. A month earlier, sales amounted to 435,000 ounces. And Melody can tell you about some of the similar experiences we've been having here at Discount Gold and Silver. You know, at Austria's Perth Mint, in the first half of 2018, silver sales were less than 4.3 million ounces. This was lower than the same period a year ago, but still very strong. In the first half of 2017, Perth Mint silver sales were almost 5 million ounces. Melody.
You know, and I just want to go also back. You have governments not only buying silver, but they're also buying gold. And I just want to bring in the precious metal sector here before we go on to continue about the production in silver declining. It's interesting, Turkey, when President Erdogan comes out and says, you know, trade in your euro, your dollar, and gold. So that might seem like a hit to get rid of your dollars and to take the lira. But it's also interesting that he mentioned gold. You know? And we know that the precious metals for Iran, with the new sanctions, they cannot obtain precious metals. So you're seeing more and more mentions, not just the normal China buying gold and India buying gold during their wedding season and so forth, Russia buying gold. You're beginning to see gold pop up in other conversations with other governments. And, you know, and I think it's really interesting. And particularly the countries that we're fighting, that they're out there looking to grab the gold. And I just, you know, what does it mean? I find it interesting, and I think it's a detail that probably most will just overlook and say, you know, what's a big deal? But it is a big deal, because it tells us just how important gold and silver is going to be in the very near future. And these are signs. They do it first. They protect themselves the first. Governments protect themselves first. The wealthy protect themselves first. And the banks and the central banks protect themselves. And, you know, the little guy, people with pensions, retirement accounts, savings, you're the last to try to go out there and preserve your wealth and your purchasing power, your savings, your hard earnings. And by then, for half of you, it's too late. But we're going to go back to silver, and we're looking at the silver mine production. That's declining. We have lower silver prices. They're making it difficult for the miners to produce. And you've seen over the past couple of years, the silver mine production has actually declined. In 2015, worldwide silver mine production was 891 million ounces. In 2017, it went down to 852 million ounces. That's close to 5% over the two-year period. So, and I wouldn't expect to see things get better on the production side. Silver miners have cut back on exploration over the past few years. So, again, higher prices are coming.
Yeah, and the fifth, certainly last but not least, factor affecting silver is just economic data in general favors silver. You know, don't forget, you know, we all know silver is a precious metal. And like gold, it hedges against inflation. You know, and as it stands, we're seeing inflation creep up higher. In the U.S., in the first 6 months of 2018, prices increased by, you know, an actual 1.1%, although, as we just mentioned, you know, well over 2% on a year-over-year basis. With so much money being printed over the past few years, you know, we can't be shocked to see inflation soaring much higher in the coming weeks, months, and years. With inflation creeping up higher in other major economies as well, Melody, it wouldn't be surprising to see investors rush to buy things that protect their assets. Gold and silver could be one such thing. In short, current economic data favors higher silver prices.
Absolutely. And what happens is, you know, prior to any really big monetary, you know, we'll take the government's 4.1 GDP and great economy and so forth. You know, you do have silver that has turned into an industrial metal. Gold a little bit, but it's still the money. It's still money. It's still the monetary metal. But silver really is converted to an industrial metal. But when we have these geopolitical times and we have these issues with inflation and we have these issues with our monetary system and what we're heading into, silver will convert back to a monetary metal because people will go to gold and silver as a means of safety. It's happened before. It's going to happen again. It's happened 100 years ago, 150 years ago, and it's going to happen again. So again, it's just been something that's, you know, in the times that we live in, you know, when you have to push debt and you have to keep your debt growing in order to keep the economy growing, very little is going to be talked about when it comes to gold and silver and the precious metals and the importance. But that's going to change. Just wait until the September 30th when they have to start talking about the budget and these numbers and, you know,
government
what the
shutdown. Yeah.
So but there's a lot of things, just like Turkey. We don't know where it's going and we don't know where it's going to end, and it could have been Turkey could be just that one little thing from left field that starts with trying to bring home a pastor, and I can start to the first domino that affects our monetary system, and not just here, and that's around the world. We don't know what that contagion is. We don't know how it's going to affect those banks and the debt owned and due by or from Turkey. So we're going to talk a little bit about, we're going to go someplace else. We're going to talk about Nicaragua, how it's been 30 years, Dave, since it dominated the headlines in the Iran-Contra affair. 30 years? I was just a baby.
The more things change, the more they remain the same.
The same. And we're changing as we're going into our next break, and we'll be right back in just a few moments.
Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. Day complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host Dave Allen, and we were going to talk about Nicaragua. 30 years since the Iran-Contra affair. And, of course, that scandal had revealed some of the senior members of the Reagan administration had been secretly funding Nicaraguan rebel groups fighting the leftist Sandinista government by conducting arms sales to Iran. And since the Iran-Contra and the end of the armed conflict in 1990, the Central American nation has largely managed to stay off the front pages. But once again, it's on the verge of a complete collapse as protests that began this spring over government cuts to Social Security has steadily escalated or are now turning deadly. There have been over 400 people that have been killed as a result of the ongoing conflicts between demonstrators and pro-government security forces since this crisis began. You don't hear anywhere on any media talk about this, report about this, or even care about this, but it is important.
I almost have to capture the words as they're coming from my mouth. Melody, I mean, opposition forces are focused on forcing the early removal of husband and wife duo, President Daniel Ortega, and his vice president, Rosario Murillo, from office. Rosario happens to be Mrs. Ortega, or Mr. Ortega happens to be, well, whatever, Mr. Murillo. Yes, you heard that correctly, ladies and gentlemen. The vice president is married to Nicaragua's president. You know, leaders of the opposition charge that Ortega, who was that leader of the Sandinistas that Melanie referenced a minute ago, he's now poised to enter his 12th year, 12th consecutive year in power, running the country like a dictatorship. You know, they charge that Ortega and his wife have been cracking down on peaceful protests, cutting off all non-state media propaganda, as well as banning opposition. Jeez. Demonstrators are hoping to force early elections, yet with Ortega and his loyalists standing firm, the risk of the country spiraling into civil war is reportedly looking more and more likely. One person said, even in states that don't directly border Mexico, another Nicaraguan civil war and an ensuing refugee crisis could shift the national debate here back to border security and immigration reform.
Well, you know, first of all, this is just what happens when you cut back on Social Security, when you take away money that's been promised to people, especially to money that's been paid by the people. They expect to get it back when they retire. And this is what's going to happen right here in this country when they begin to address the entitlements, because they cannot continue with the government debt. They're going to have to find the revenue somewhere, and that revenue is going to come from your Social Security accounts, whatever is left, if there's anything left at all other than the IOUs that are already there. But this is what happens when benefits are cut, because people get upset. But with Nicaragua, we could see this happen, perhaps become a major issue right before the midterm elections, because this crisis, their political crisis, could spin out of control, and it could create a massive refugee crisis here at the border. And maybe we'll even see something like this by fall, right before the midterm elections. So Even in the states that don't directly border Mexico, another Nicaraguan civil war and an ensuing refugee crisis could shift the national debate back to border security and immigration reform. I think that's where it's going to be at anyway, if they don't address it, you know, going into September 30th. So,
yeah. But, isn't this fascinating? This story has flown so far below the radar, at least in mainstream news media sources, and given the amount of attention and certainly controversy that has pervaded our country, our own country, for the last 2+ years during the end of the campaign and the first 2 years of the new administration on. Refugees, whether it's, Syria's, the Syrian crisis, or certainly, their southern border. A Nicaraguan refugee crisis coming through Mexico, can you imagine just how that could really ramp up debate and division? And certainly, paint our TVs with political advertising on both sides of the fence this September and October, that could make the last couple of election cycles pair in comparison. Last time Nicaragua Melody entered, a period of sustained armed conflict was in the 1980s. And during that period, over 250,000 Nicaraguans sought asylum in the U.S. A generation later, the population of that country is now more than twice what it was then, and already thousands of Nicaraguans have fled the neighboring countries. So, it's just a matter of time before they make their way to the U.S. border. And if a civil war does in fact ensue, there are plenty of other examples in our hemisphere and abroad, to know that, as you just suggested, things are going to get intense. I mean, the massive influx of Nicaraguans would dwarf the current number of migrants from Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala. They've sought to come to the U.S. over the last 10 years, trying to escape escalation and gang and drug cartel violence. I think you called it, this wave. It won't necessarily be a red or a blue wave. It's going to be a wave of asylum seekers, at the border with Mexico. Melody.
Yeah, that's something that we'll have to look for as we get closer and see how this violence in Nicaragua, if it doesn't escalate more, could turn into a full-blown countrywide civil war. But again, and we see that, where it starts, what happens, and they get deep in debt, and, the citizens, It happens, going to happen there, and we see Venezuela, country after country, and again, will we see that here? I think we will, but the Pentagon's top, let's go on to the Pentagon's top engineer, has been critical of Russia and China for militarizing space. And, of course, the administration wants to address this with the formation of a sixth service branch, and it was dubbed Space Force. His remarks came, the Pentagon's top engineer, his remarks came a day before Vice President Mike Pence laid out of President Trump's visions for creating the Space Force by 2020. He says, "We are not the people who choose to weaponize space, but if we are challenged, we will respond." He said that on Wednesday at the Space and Missile Defense Symposium in Huntsville, Alabama, and that was Michael Griffin. He says the Defense Department is today working on a means to defend our existing capabilities, and we will work, we'll be working on methods to project our national power onto our adversaries. So, I actually saw where they have, already they have, logos created for, the Space Force. And, I think I saw 6 or 7 of them or something like that. It's going to become a national.
Yeah. Look for Amazon boosting its sales of copycat. Maybe they'll even be, an official NASA version for sale to the public. God knows what they could look like. But, you know, Griffin, who's a former NASA administrator, explained that Russia's and China's pursuit of hypersonic missiles, it's the kind of weapon we touched on a few weeks ago, you know, the U.S. currently can't defend itself against. And that's prompted the Pentagon to accelerate its development of space-based systems. But again, to repeat what Melody said, Griffin pointed out it's our adversaries and not the U.S. who've chosen to weaponize this type of capability, which in and of itself does appear to be unusually stabilizing, taking us a step beyond, you know, this crazy, you know, mutually assured destruction existence we've lived in for almost half a century now. We'll have to wait and see. You know, the Chinese apparently have been sprinting to deploy this new breed of weapon. You know, Griffin described China's efforts as much more thoughtful, at least compared with Moscow's developments.
That really is amazing. And, yesterday Putin slammed the U.S. sanctions as illegal. It was just yesterday that the Kremlin had lashed out at the new U.S. sanctions, calling them absolutely illegal and assuring investors that the country's financial system is firm despite declines in the ruble and domestic equities. Our State Department said on Wednesday it would impose additional penalties against Russia by the end of the month, after concluding that Moscow used a nerve poison agent against a former Russian spy and his daughter in an attack in England. I think didn't we already expel some Russian diplomats because of that? So I guess these are additional sanctions. Russia assets tumbled following news of the sanctions, with the U.S. dollar strengthening to its highest level against the ruble since November of 2016. So what'd their 10-year note yield today?
Well, they hit a high of 8%, at least the other day. That was its highest level close to a year and a half. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov was reported to say, "Making a link to the British poisoning is for us an unacceptable, and such restrictions like those passed by the American side earlier are absolutely illegal and do not correspond to international law." Now, U.S.-Russian relations, we know, to some extent, notwithstanding the imagery portrayed after the summit between Trump and Putin, have soured in recent months, mainly over our new tariffs on foreign aluminum, plus an investigation ongoing into Moscow's alleged hacking and disinformation campaign during the 2016 elections. Now, you know, on point, and this is why I believe it relates so directly and poignantly to gold and silver, is, you know, as one Russian market analyst was quoted as saying, "Predictability is a core principle of good public policy, and the lack thereof makes corporate and investment decision-making in Russia more challenging." And that kind of geopolitical uncertainty and the rising and the level of volatility certainly is another reason why we believe more people will be looking for the safe haven of gold and silver in the coming days.
Dave, I didn't realize you became a marriage counselor.
Well, you know, in the remaining time in today's show, you know, yes, marriage. What do you think?
Well, you're writing about, in our weekend blog, you're writing about marriage. Our blog is going to be published later today, ladies and gentlemen. So make sure you get to the website if you'd like an email version of it. We don't do hard copies, but just go to the website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Go to the little mailbox, sign up to get your blog, and you'll also get our weekly newsletter. But yes, the matrimony of man and woman, but not to each other, but rather to gold. That sounds kind of interesting, Dave.
Well, you know.
It piqued my interest.
Hey, well, the spot gold of the price of spot gold started today at $12.12, close to an 18-month low. That's not too surprising, though. You know, after starting the year at an encouraging 1,300, it was up a healthy 15% from the start of 2017. You know, gold jumped up to 1,362 by mid-February before riding, you know, its bumpy, more recent trends in the dog days of August. This morning anyway, we thought it was going to be a nice reprieve from the heat, but you know, the price sort of retreated from its early morning rise and ended about where it started.
You wrote in the blog real quickly, we got about a minute and a half, that you know, some of these metal observers have suggested that maybe we haven't been thinking about it, about gold, in the right way. And what do you mean by that?
Well, that's sort of the crux of the article, that, you know, rather than viewing your purchases of gold, and by extension silver and your other precious metals, that we shouldn't be looking at them as, you know, as much as you know, buying low and selling high, for example. They're always going to be up, they're always going to be down. The point of the article really is, you know, making a thoughtful analysis that since money is gold, you know, and the system isn't really anchored, you really never make or lose money in gold. You just adjust the quantity of your holdings. You know, and that's our opinion about how people ought to think about it. You know, if you own 100 ounces of gold, that can go up or down, but the dollar price is irrelevant since it's an arbitrary benchmark, not a real one. Read more.
DGScoins.com, ladies and gentlemen, and we're out of time. We'll be back on Monday, so until then, be safe, good night, and God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.